Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thank you for spending part of your day with me. 20 years ago, pitcher David Cone, then an ace for the New York Yankees, accomplished what only 23 pitchers to date have ever managed. He pitched a perfect game. The feat was icing on Cone's big fat cake of a career. He's a five-time All-Star. He's a Cy Young Award winner. He has five World Series rings. And he's accomplished many of these milestones right here in the city of New York. First with the Mets from 1987 until 1991, and then with the Yankees from 95 to 2000. He retired from the majors after one last season with the Mets in 03. In a new book, Full Count, The Education of a Pitcher, Cone teams up with veteran journalist and longtime friend Jack Curry. It's as much a thorough exploration of the art of pitching as it is a personal narrative. Full Count is available now, and on June 19th, the 20th anniversary of his perfect game, David will be hosting a fundraising event featuring a performance by Paul Simon, and the proceeds will go to the David Cone Foundation. You can get tickets at www.conezone.com. David and Jack are in studio. Thanks for coming down.
Thanks for having us, Allison.
It's a pleasure.
So, David, tell me about the foundation, when you started it, and what you really hope to accomplish with it.
Well, you know, I really started it back when I was an active player, and we helped build a children's hospital in Westchester, the Maria Ferrari Children's Hospital. And it's a trauma center, and it's done such great work over the last 20 years or so. And there's several other charities. The Mosaic Mental Health Fund is an amazing organization in the Bronx, serving the mental health needs of a lot of underserved kids, and served over 30,000 kids over the last 50 years at Mosaic Mental Health. So there's several charities that are involved over the years, and we've kind of ramped it up again. You know, it was pretty active when I was an active player, and now that I'm a broadcaster, I've seen some opportunities, and 20-year anniversary of the perfect game, and the event you just mentioned gives us another opportunity to kind of ramp it back up.
So make that a win-win.
Absolutely.
So now we'll talk baseball. Sure. Why did you want to write this memoir sort of as a meditation on pitching as well?
Well, I think, you know, when Jack and I first started this project, I think it became apparent that we wanted to do something different. There were a lot of issues that we needed to cover, even back to my Mets days, and there was a lot of opportunities to show, some vulnerabilities of a pitcher. We're sort of portrayed as these supremely confident professional players, and sometimes it's anything but that. And some of the best players I've ever been around are the most insecure ones. And there were some unique stories in there, and Jack really brought it out in terms of showing some anxiety issues at times, and even some of the behavior I'm not so proud of that we can cover and go back over and kind of have some teachable moments in there.
Well, when you think about pitching and you see one person up on a mound by themselves, that just the pressure of being, you know, you're part of a team, but you are by yourself.
You really are by yourself, and I never really felt that more than during my perfect game. When you're throwing a perfect game, there's so many superstitions involved in baseball that nobody will talk to you.
Yeah, I heard that you when you went back in between the games, nobody would look in the eye.
Yeah, they wouldn't even look at you. So after eight innings, I've got a perfect game on Yogi Berra Day of 20 years ago, and I walk up into the Yankee Stadium clubhouse, and nobody's there, and I'm feeling very anxious at that point, very nervous, and so I walked into the bathroom, put my hands on the sink, and had a proverbial talk with myself in the mirror, and it was out loud. I mean, if you would have walked in on it, it would look pretty weird. And even talking about it sounds a little unorthodox, but it was a battle. I mean, I was filled with anxiety about, this is my last chance. I can't blow this. And what if I hang a slider? What if something happens? I'm sort of going down these negative thought roads of preparing myself in the event that it doesn't come through or it doesn't happen. And then I fought it back, and then it was positive thinking. And it was just an unreal kind of a conversation I had. I revealed it to Jack, and he said, we've got to put this in the book.
Yeah, Jack, I'm going to ask you, you're working with a friend, you're a broadcaster, but you're a journalist first and foremost. How did you want to approach the book as a journalist?
I've watched David pitch for his entire career, and I always felt when he was on the mound, more than any pitcher I ever covered, that the wheels were spinning, and you could see his creativity telling him, what should I throw next, or two or three pitches down the road. And David used the word earlier, honesty. I've covered baseball for almost 30 years, and when you walk out of that clubhouse, reporters talk, and we know the guys who are honest, and we know the guys who aren't telling the truth. David was always honest, and I thought if we could write a book that was honest about his career, the warts and all, I thought that this would be a book that we would both be proud of. And I think we achieved that. David already referenced that, that he gets personal about some of his mistakes. And I saw one person who reviewed the book and said, they actually write more about a game where he failed than they wrote about the year where he won the Cy Young. And I said, wow, did I fail as an author there and not giving him more merit for that Cy Young? But I think as we got into this, David did want to bare his soul a little bit about his career.
What was the process like?
The process was I approached him in the press box of Yankee Stadium a few years back. I pitched to him my idea of what I thought the book should be.
And even
even though we're friends, this is a pitch. I'm trying to sell a book to my buddy here. And after about a 2 or 3 minute pitch, David said, let's do it. And I said, now he's all in. And from there, we had 42 interviews.
Wow.
Where they didn't all have to be in person, but by phone. I remember getting off the beach in the Caribbean once on vacation. I was in St. Kitts, and I said to my wife, Pamela, David's available this afternoon. I've got to go do a phone interview. So we just made sure that we made enough time for each other. And every time I finished an interview with him, and I'm not exaggerating, I'm not lying, he made me so much smarter about pitching, and he made that book better. We left stuff out that we could have had another 200 pages in this book.
What was the toughest question to answer for you that Jack posed to you?
Well, I think the toughest, it was kind of a series of questions, and there were a lot of issues early in my career with the Mets, and you know, a lot of people, you know, it was 30 years ago. This is 20 years since I threw a perfect game with the Yankees, and as I revisited the Mets days, you know, playing with that wild group of players coming off the heels of the 86 Mets, I knew there were a lot of issues both on and off the field that we were going to have to address, and it became apparent early that we just couldn't avoid it. We had to deal with it head on, and it churned up a lot of emotions and a lot of memories that I wasn't so proud of at times, and then also some things that I really learned from, and I thought that was the light bulb effect for me that, you know, we can give a different twist on your typical autobiographical baseball book and really get raw and get honest and deal with some really tough issues that happened to me when I was a Met.
My guests are David Cohn and Jack Curry. We're talking about the new book, Full Count, The Education of a Pitcher. There are some classic parts of this in our memoir. We talk about dad, talk about how important your dad was. As an adult now, looking back, when do you think you and your dad, or your dad, got really serious about you as an athlete, like recognize, oh wow, my son has got some talent and we're going to dig in here?
I think it was probably when I was about 8 or 9 years old and I was bugging him constantly about wanting to pitch. I mean, it was in my blood. I just felt it. And he was like, no, I want you to be a hitter. He tried to name me Theodore after Ted Williams. And my mom, when he left the hospital room, changed it to David at the last minute. I think there's still some friction over that right to the end. But both my mom and my father both were so instrumental. My mother especially, she was the psychological coach. I call her the first sabermetrician I ever met because she understood regression to the mean, so to speak, before it was cool. You know, now it's a very popular saying in baseball. And she always was pumping me up. When I would have bad days, she would always say, you're due. It's okay. It'll come around. It's not going to stay this way. It's the law of averages. She really believed in that. And I heard her say that constantly to me. And then, of course, my dad was a blue-collar guy. He worked the graveyard shift in a meatpacking plant. He'd come home from work and he'd be dead dog tired, and I would be tugging on him, Dad, let's go. We need to pitch. I need to throw. You need to teach me. And I think right then and there, he knew that, well, this kid really wants this. So, he really met the challenge. And even though he was tired, he got up, he took me out in the backyard, and he really literally taught me how to pitch.
How did it happen or not happen that you didn't play in high school?
My high school that I went to did not field a baseball team. They just did not have a team. So they had sports programs. They had a powerhouse football team. They had other sports that were very good. But for budgetary reasons, in that era, they didn't have a team. They have one now. I helped them build a field through my foundation. Yeah, so they're definitely in better shape now. But I played in a summer league against college players when I was 15 years old. So it was 21 and under. So during the summertime, I was always playing against older competition and taking my beatings and, you know, just trying to just stay above water, treading water, so to speak. And it really made me better in the long run, having to always kind of face that uphill battle.
I say that's a blessing in disguise, scaling up.
It really was. In retrospect, now that I look back on it, I sponsor a team in that league as well because I'm so thankful to have that team, the Ban Johnson League, it's called in Kansas City.
There are a lot of chapters in this book, Jack, that deal with the details and the mechanics of pitching. When you had to sort of collect all that information, how did you decide? What was the conversation about what we're going to include? How much in detail are we going to go so that people like me, I shared, I have a kid who was starting to pitch. I know some about sports. I'm sort of into it, but I don't know the nitty gritty, but I understood what I was reading. How did you guys work through that?
It's a fantastic question because you're right. We want this book or wanted this book to read as if it had a lot of pitching lessons and a lot of theories and philosophies, but we didn't want it to read like a pitching textbook. So
right.
I think it became a feel between David and I for each chapter. And yes, we talk about the way that he gripped a slider and how his grip and the amount of friction that he wanted on two fingers was different than most pitchers, because most pitchers only want to have one finger as the spin generator. I think even if you're not a huge baseball fan, you can understand that. So mm-hmm. we went back and forth and decided what were the stories that could be applicable to the ardent baseball fan, or maybe just the David Cone fan who has heard him on Yes and says, wait a second, I want to pick up that book and find out what he did in his career.
Another thing I think is interesting in the book is you talk a lot about sort of mental toughness. Not just about the physicality of baseball and the physicality of being a pitcher, but just about all of the mind games and the ways you really have to be tough. Where did you learn it? Is it hard to do?
Very hard to do. You know, it goes back to childhood, right to my father again. The toughness that he had to have by, working full time in the graveyard shift, and my mother too, working full time trying to raise four kids. So that really from the start is where it all began. And then a series of injuries that I went through from the minor leagues. I had a serious knee injury that mm-hmm. really derailed me. And then when I finally make it up to the big leagues with the Mets, I get hit by a pitch that shatters my pitching hand, the pinky on my pitching hand. And then when I finally get to the Yankees, here we go, I'm back to New York, and I get an aneurysm in my arm and have to have an arterial bypass surgery and thought my career was over. So, the series of injuries along the way were part of it. And then some of the lessons, too. I think there's a common theme throughout the book that deals with the cultural issues and the growth in the game. And, the old school mentality of you've got to beat down the rookies, the veteran players, really put the rookies in their place, and tough love and almost verbal abuse at times, to the culture changing when Derek Jeter became a rookie with the Yankees and I was now a veteran in a position of leadership, that I wanted to go about it differently than the way I was treated, and we embraced the rookies a little more and made them feel more welcome. And I think that there's some culture issues in there, and a theme, and some mental health issues, I think, along the way that are kind of a positive light at the end of the book.
It's interesting. This is a great section. You write, what is mental toughness for a player? It's a mindset, an approach, a way of acting and reacting to the good, the bad, the unexpected, and the uncertain. As the intensity of the game increases, players preach about slowing the game down, which is a euphemism for not getting panicky. Toughness is not letting one game or anything that happened in the game rattle you, which can be challenging because adversity is disconcerting. Can you give us an example of a time when you were playing? You give us a bunch of examples, like sort of where you really had to dig deep.
Yes, this was the part, you asked about what was the toughest question. There's so many examples, but I point to one in my major league career, which had a storybook season in 1988 with the Mets. I won 20 games, lost three. It was a magical year. And then I get to right before my first playoff game in 1988. It was the Mets versus the Dodgers. And I decided to do a ghostwritten column with Bob Clappish. And in that column, I was critical. I called Oral Hershiser a great pitcher for the Dodgers, kind of a lucky pitcher. And I called their closer, Jay Howe. He reminded me of a high school pitcher because he threw so many curveballs. And that article, even though I didn't see the article before it went to print, I got the byline and I got credit for that article. And so when the Dodgers got a hold of this before I pitched, it became a big issue. It was bulletin board material. There was 100 copies of this article on their dugout wall. Their entire team was on the top step of the dugout screaming at me when I went out to warm up for that game, and I completely choked. My legs got heavy. I threw the first 8 pitches in the dirt, nowhere close to home plate. I completely just lost it, and I learned from that game. And then after the game, I've got to deal with the media. do I own up to it? I've got an out because I didn't see the last copy of that article, and I got the byline and credit for it. So I could have blamed Bob Clappish, but I didn't. I stood in front of my locker. I took the heat. I wore it completely, took responsibility. And that was, to me, the beginning of learning that hard lesson of being accountable, also not letting that situation ever bother me again. I was determined that when I pitched later in that series in Game 6 that I was going to get redemption, and I did. I came back, and I put it all away. And to me, that was a big turning point early in my career, to learn from adversity, from mistakes I had made, while at the same time reversing it and being able to learn from it quickly and then having success and having redemption right afterwards.
Jack, you as a member of the media watching this happen, what were you thinking?
Well, David was a stand-up player for the reasons that he just said. There are a lot of athletes who in that situation might have either said they were misquoted, or as David said, that was a ghost-written column. And we're both friends with Bob Clappish, the writer who wrote that. And to this day, he gives David a lot of credit because Clapp has talked about how on deadline, David said what he said. Now, Clappish is writing one article about the game. He's ghostwriting David's column. And boom, before you know it, here are the words David said. He did say them. But David spoke after that game about he said some of them in jest. He said them facetiously, but he said them. And whether you thought you said them facetiously or not, once they hit the newspaper, and this is pre-internet, but it still blew up, you're going to have to wear it, as he said. But I think what we point out in the book that is so important, he comes back a few days later in his start and just shuts down the Dodgers, absolutely dominates them, gives the Mets a chance to win that series. They don't. But he says in the book how he never felt that he was going to have a bigger obstacle than that for the rest of his career. So in a weird way, that made him the tough pitcher that he became.
The name of the book is Full Count. My guests are David Cone and Jack Curry. We're going to take a quick break. You understand this because you're a nonprofit. We got to raise some money for public radio, but we'll continue with David and Jack after a quick break. This is All of It. This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart, and we're back with David Cone, who's talking about his new book, Full Count, The Education of a Pitcher. It was written with veteran journalist and longtime friend Jack Curry. Okay, so much has changed about baseball, you guys. Pitching, got sabermetrics. We went to spring break with my son, and just watching the shift keep happening, I was like, what is going on out there? Is there anything, any of these new ideas about making the game faster, is there anything that you've heard that you think, yes, that would actually improve baseball? And then is there something that you think, you know what, this really gets away from the essence of baseball? One of each.
Yeah, we know. I think I've evolved on this issue. Obviously, I think a lot of people are, you know, slow to come around with modern technology, obviously, in all walks of life. But with regard to baseball, you know, I really do think pace of play can be an issue at times. Mm-hmm. And players and batters are much more sophisticated and have a lot of information before they go up to the plate. So maybe a pitch clock does make sense. You know, we've seen some games where batters step out of the box every pitch. Pitchers step and walk around the mound. So maybe keep the pitchers on the mound, stay on the mound, throw the baseball, keep the batters in the box. And that sort of pitch clock that's been used in the minor leagues that after a while is easily adjusted to might be a good thing. And I also think, along with the pitch clock, that it might be time to help home plate umpires. Maybe time, you know, maybe not full-scale electronic umpires, but I think you can still have a home plate umpire, but he could have some sort of earpiece, and you could use the technology to help him have a more uniform strike zone.
What do you think, Jack, as a journalist?
I've long been a proponent of DH across the board. I hate seeing pitchers hit. I think most pitchers can't hit. David will vouch for this. Not that he couldn't hit, but even coming up now through high school and the minor leagues, pitchers don't hit anymore. Their specialty is to pitch. Yeah. So I've long been a proponent of let's just have DH across the board. And one other thing that baseball has proposed, and I think David and I have talked about this a lot, is they've talked about it. When you bring in a reliever, he has to face three pitches. That's something that is pending and something that might happen. I don't like that rule because I think it gets too much into the strategy of the game, and I think a team should be allowed to win or lose with its best players. And after two batters, if you don't think your reliever is your best option, I hate the idea that a manager is hamstrung and has to leave that pitcher in.
My guests are David Cohn and Jack Curry. We're talking about the new book, Full Count, The Education of a Pitcher. I also want to mention that there is going to be a 20th Perfect Game anniversary event, David's Perfect Game, for the David Cohn Foundation will be the beneficiary. The fundraiser is on June 19th, and you can get tickets at conezone.com. You guys are really honest in this book, and you sort of alluded to this earlier, David. You mentioned two really difficult things that happened to you in your career, specifically allegations against you. I'm going to read these specifically. They're in the book. If you look in the index, it's there. One, a woman accused you of rape. The police investigation found that charges were unfounded and they were dropped. Three women alleged that you exposed yourself to them in the Mets bullpen. Two of those women dropped the charges and one settled out of court. This is a book about pitching. Why did you decide to include these issues that happened in your past?
Once again, I think when Jack and I sat down and we were going to be raw and honest, that you can't just gloss over these issues that happened. They were so widely covered back when I was a member of the Mets. And, even to this day, I still get somebody that brings that up at some point or another, even though it was a long time ago. And I remember back then I did an interview with Roy Firestone, who was with ESPN back then, had his own show. And I went on the show and I said, you know what? And it's kind of relevant in the Me Too movement now, too. I said the worst part about this whole thing was that even though I was falsely accused, of rape, that I had to stand up and defend myself. But at the same time, the worst part was that it hurts the cause of women who are really raped. And even back then, I went on record, and that's how I felt. And I've always felt that way because of my mom and my sister. And I was raised by really strong feminine women, feminist movement women. They were way ahead of the curve even back in the 70s and 80s. And I had to deal with them. I had to look them in the face and tell them the story. What happened? Tell us the truth. And so, as we did this book, I really felt the need to kind of clarify that a little bit and deal with it rather than just gloss over it or not cover it at all.
You, as a sports journalist, when you deal with players, not specifically Dave in this case, more specifically David, if you wanted to, what do you see your role when you're a sports journalist and you're having to deal with allegedly illegal behavior?
In terms of writing the book with David or in terms of just covering any story?
I'm interested generally, yeah.
I think, Allison, as with anything, you want to get the story right. Mm-hmm. You want to cover as many angles of it as possible so that whatever you produce is correct. Talk to as many people as you can and try and get the full story. In this instance, I give David a ton of credit because you're absolutely right. My proposal to him was let's do a book about pitching. Let's get inside your head. As we started to talk about those Mets years, and we were going to include some of the Mets' rowdy behavior, and David talked about how 15 guys would leave the ballpark, get in five cabs, go to a bar, and close the bar. Well, it's hard to talk about that behavior and then not throw some things that were on the record and that occurred with David. And again, I give him total credit that he was willing to go back and revisit that. And we cover it. We're not spending a lot of time on it because of what you said. The allegations were unfounded and it's 30 years ago. But David was a total pro as a collaborator and being willing to talk about it.
Dave, what do you hope somebody takes away from this book after they read the whole thing?
I think we referenced it earlier about sort of a cultural shift that I detail through the 30 years that have passed since then. And part of it was when I first broke in, you had to be this tough macho guy that held everything in, repressed your emotion, never showed up your opponents. You couldn't show natural, authentic emotion when you were high. And then when you were low or if you had some anxiety issues or even depression issues, that you couldn't talk about it because you were perceived as being weak and not tough enough. And I think that for the better, that's changed. The culture has changed. I was treated very, very roughly by the Mets and some of their leaders when I was a rookie. And I used that as motivation at the time, and I was kind of used to it. But then I made that determination when I became a veteran and Derek Jeter was a rookie, that we're going to embrace him. We're going to go about it a little different way. And I think that's progress. And even on down the line, when we talk about some of the anxiety issues that I faced and being honest about that, it's okay to ask for help. It's okay to talk about it. And I really wanted that theme kind of to be weaved throughout the book. And I think Jack did just a fantastic job of bringing that out.
That's so interesting, the idea of the mental health component.
Yes, absolutely.
The name of the book is Full Count, The Education of a Pitcher. Jack Curry and David Cohn, thanks guys for coming in. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, Allison.
This is All of It on WNYC.